Hey everybody, and welcome to Vassals of Kingsgrave's review of the movie Ready Player One, directed by Steven Spielberg, based on the book by Ernest Cline, adapted by Zach Penn, who did some of the X-Men movies. So, my name is Bina 007. I'm going to be your host today, and joining me are Zach. It's because it's gaming. I think it's going to be Zach. My name is Bina 007. I'm going to be your host today, and I am joined by Greg.
I was going to do a Zach impression, but then I realized whatever I would do will not be as good as Paul. So this is Greg. Paul is the fool on the forums.
And by Adam.
This is Adam, drowned snow in the oasis.
Exactly. So maybe we can just go around and do a quick lemon cakes out of five, and maybe also just explain whether or not you've read the books or not. And I guess it's fair to say we're going to spoil the movie and probably the books too in this podcast. There is also actually another VOK just on the books. I think it's VOK 158. I listened to it recently and it's really fun, so you should go check that out if you're just a book reader. So, Adam,
As a book club, right?
it was
One
a
of the
book club.
official BO of
Absolutely.
that
Back in the midst
series.
of time. It's a really good one. So, Greg,
Yeah, all those years ago.
it was like I
It
remember at one
shall
point
return.
White Raven was mentioning his girlfriend and like, I've met his baby. So it's like, oh man, that's back in the midst of time. Adam, marks out of five, thoughts? How did you come to the film?
I read the book actually because of that book club. And it's like it's one of the more enjoyable books I'd say I've probably read in the last, 10 years or so. It's just fun. So I was excited when they announced the movie, but I was also kind of apprehensive because I was like, there's no way they're gonna be able to put stuff in there. And of course they weren't, but it still ended up pretty well. I'd give the movie like a solid like 3.5 out of 5. I thought it was really good. As far as an adaptation goes, kind of compressing all that, they made a lot of changes, but I think most of them worked out pretty well, and it still kind of captured the essence of what was in the book.
Okay, Greg, I know you Skyped me and said you hated it, so.
Yeah, I kind of evolved because like in the middle of the movie, like I had to stop doing the whole like, oh, this isn't how it was, and just kind of go with it. And there are several things that I really didn't like, but it did keep like the feel of the book and the spirit of the book, I think. But like Adam said, there was no way they could have done it to please everybody, especially like the hardcore book fans, which, I remember getting the advanced reader copy for this book, with like a letter from the, like, oh, we think this is going to be a big one. And, it blew up, and it's one of my favorite books personally, and just a hand sell to give to like everybody who's over like 10 years old. I'm fine. I'm more okay with it now. But at the time, like, I remember leaving the theater like, ugh. And then like everybody started cheering. I was like, ugh, I hate you all. But I give it a 3, and, I
Wow,
enjoy
I
like
thought
it
you were going
was
to give it a one instead of like hate
no,
podcast.
because like I don't want to be that. I don't like just hating stuff because it's easy to hate stuff. Like I like to have a reason, and the more I think of it, like Spielberg did the best he could, I think, without making it a much darker movie. Because it
Yes.
was for it felt like a kid's movie, and then like the Shining part happened. I'm like, oh, they're going to terrify people. But no, like I did have fun watching it, and I was just looking for particular, like I was looking forward to certain things that didn't happen, and that's probably why I disliked it as much as I did at the time. But a day
Yeah.
has gone by, and I'm like, all right, it was a fine, fun movie, but I'm not going to see it again. And but it was fine, a 3. I'm happy with that.
It's so funny because I think you've come from below and then kind of moved up to a 3, whereas I think when I walked out of a movie, I was like, this is a 5, this is awesome. And as I thought about it more, I was like, that bit was a bit weak and that bit was a bit silly, so maybe I settled on a
And
3 or a
then you
4.
went and read the book afterwards. Is that what happened?
Yeah, so I did listen to the book club at the time, and I thought I should read this, and then I never did because I always have way too many books that I buy and don't read. And actually, I wasn't even that excited about the film because I tend to think Spielberg makes these, really exciting films, but quite schmaltzy, and I'm not that much of a Spielberg or latter Spielberg fan. But it was Easter weekend, and we had nothing to do, so we went to watch it with very few expectations. And even though it's quite a long film, it's over 2 hours, it just really rocked by really quickly. I was excited all the way through. I mean, I have no gaming kind of history really, but I loved all the pop culture stuff. I loved the Shining stuff. And just in general, it just felt like I liked the characters. I wanted to see them win. I was into it, and I bounced out of the cinema. And then I ordered the book on Amazon. I read it, I think 2 weekday nights after work, because it's that horrible phrase, unputdownable, like you want to get through the next chapter. And I really like the book, and I think they're quite different in tone. So it's kind of weird because I think the things I preferred in the book are the darker stuff, like the real world in the book is much darker, and the real people are uglier and fatter and patheticer.
And it's more spread out, and you get kind of a grander sense of how shitty things have become.
Exactly, and I thought the Spielberg characteristically just made it a lot more, you know, shiny and easy to digest, and all the stuff I don't normally like in Spielberg. So, but then he did make some changes, like giving Samantha more agency, which and making the Og Deus Ex Machina thing less ridiculous, which I preferred. But overall, I think I took my sort of post movie excitedness from a 5 down to a 3, just having thought about it a little bit more. But I think the changes are really fascinating because some are positive and some are negative. So I'm glad we've all read it because I think that's going to make this a really fun discussion.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, that was one of my big, I mean, was just not seeing the greater world. Like, I love the dystopian, you know, aspect of the world in the book. And you really don't get, you get like the stacks in the beginning, but like, there's really not much, you don't get any sense. Like, they talk about, I think they mentioned like the bandwidth wars in the movie, which I don't think was in the books, but like, I know there were some kind of, there's been all this like cataclysmic stuff happening. And it just felt like that was in the background. I mean, I get that, like, it's a 2-hour movie, he had to pick and choose.
But yeah.
There was a lot of chaff in the Oasis stuff that I thought they could have cut out.
Let's focus on the real world a lot. Let's just do that as section one. It felt to me a little bit like, because Spielberg has like very good designers available to him, the real world was just too pretty. I mean, I know the stacks are meant to be grungy and stuff, but this is meant to be this kind of vertical trailer park. And it just looked too cool. It just looked too fun. I wanted to be like going down that rope thing that Wade Watts wings down to the ground level. And even like the junkyard of cars where he has his little hideout to play games. I mean, it felt too interesting. It didn't feel like post-apocalyptic enough. And, you know, when you read the book, I was shocked because it's like, and you don't know if you're going to make it to school because of all the, like, his aunt is explicitly a junkie and there's like pedophiles after kids. And you're like, shit, you know.
Yeah, and this, it's like Wade was a real clean shit, you know what I'm saying? Real clean shit.
Yeah, he didn't look like he was living with a junkie.
Everything about him was like, his hair wasn't messed, like it was all perfectly coiffed, and I don't know, I think part of where the book kind of had its strength was the fact that he was basically trapped on the school planet all the time, and you got a sense that, like, he, you know, like you got more of a sense of the fact that, like, unless you had money, you really couldn't do anything, even in the Oasis. So, like, even though it was an escape for some people, like, a lot of people, you know, were pretty well boxed in, even, like, there was a class system within it.
Absolutely. I just thought Wade was too pretty. I mean, when he starts the book, he's meant to be a bit schlubby. He's got a bit of acne. At some point, he loses
and a belly.
Weight. But then he kind of, like, starts using this weird shampoo, so he loses his hair, and it's all stubbly when it grows back when he's in IOI. And I just thought, I don't know if any of you saw the recent Blade Runner 2049.
I haven't seen it yet. I've recently seen Blade Runner for the first time.
I just thought that was stunning in depicting a kind of dystopian future and an environmentally degraded one. And I kind of, when I was reading the book, I thought, you know, like those apartments that he lives in when you rent the little gaming cube and stuff, like that would just feel more like Blade Runner. It would just feel really grim. And it sounds stupid, but I think Spielberg just has too much sunshine in this future.
Well, yeah, like I recently watched the documentary about Spielberg on HBO, and like he does talk about, like, he does like to show the fun side of things. And that's why some of his, like when he tried to do that comedy 1941, why it was so over the top that it failed. But like, piggybacking on what Adam said with the world, like one of the reasons I love the world in the books is because it's not, I don't think it's post-apocalyptic, it's probably right on the border of like re-apocalypse, but it's definitely like, you get the sense of, like, there's no more gas left, like only a few people have electric cars, and like there's been all these wars, like the water war or something like that, like society's falling apart, and you don't really get that, and they never really say like why Columbus, Ohio is the center of the world in the movie. Like, you mentioned once that it's Halliday's hometown, but like they don't talk about like,
that's where he based his company, so everyone moved there.
Right, but like they don't really, I don't think they said that, you just have to like assume that. But
that's what they said in the movie anyway.
Oh, they did? Okay, I might have missed that.
Yeah, they said like, well, you know, because that's where their campus was, like everyone is sort of built up there. And because, I mean, they don't cover it as much as they do in the books, but the mobility of the average person has really gone away. Right, like people don't road trip, people don't travel. And you know, in the book, I thought that was a nice thing, because when you finally get to like, you know, H's van and stuff, and you realize that like, you know, she's traveling she's mobile, that's actually kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, they don't even go to the next city over, because it's like, oh my gosh, you know, gas and stuff, right?
And just the idea that if you're living in this world that is degraded and you're poor and you're not eating well, you are going to be spotty and look a bit shitty. You're not going to look like a nice little clean-cut all-American hero. It was just too pretty. I feel like Spielberg was the perfect director for the Oasis scenes, but he mm-hmm. was not the perfect director for the real world. And I think it's kind of patronizing to kids. Right. I feel that even if you aim this at the tween market or the YA market, you know, they've all watched The Hunger Games and stuff. They can cope with a real world that looks a bit shittier than this. It almost felt like Spielberg was, I don't know, back in the early 80s when we were a bit kinder to kids on screen. And like modern kids can take a little bit more grit. How did you guys feel about the depiction of IOI and Paul Sorrento in the real world?
Are you confusing Paul Sorvino with Nolan Sorrento?
Sorry, Nolan Sorrento. The standard issue Australian actor who plays every bad guy now.
Well, isn't that the bad guy from Rogue One?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, Rogue One. And he's been good in a number of things lately. And I really enjoyed him in this. I mean, the character was fairly one-dimensional, but I really enjoyed watching him kind of embody the character. And I feel like we didn't spend enough time with kind of how shitty they were, you know, but yeah. Outside of him, it just seemed like, well, they were just the corporation trying to get some, you know, trying to take their crack at taking over this company because it was available, right? And then you hear like, oh well, they, you know, they put people in these loyalty centers and stuff, but we didn't really go into that too much.
I did like how they have all the little geeks who are trying to answer all the questions. They look like Harry Potter kids, and again, I thought that was just way too nice. Like, even the bad guys are quite cuddly instead of,
and at the end they're all celebrating and stuff. I'm like, I would think they would be afraid to be happy.
No, but they're truly nerds at heart. They're happy at heart.
They're basically
obviously, but I mean, like, it's supposed to be so oppressive that, like, you know, if they celebrate someone else winning, they'd all be afraid of getting shot or something. I don't know.
Yeah. IOI in the book is much more sinister than it is in the movie. And the one of the scenes for me, like, when Sam or Artemis is, like, running around, just walks into like the CEO's office and gets in his chair. Like, this would not happen. Like,
the fact that, like, when they're coming, I was like, okay, she's gonna lock the door and she's gonna lock herself in there or something. And then when they come, she just sort of hides around his like giant Professor X chair. I was like, wait a second.
But this raises an interesting question. Did you think it was more or less plausible that Sam would just wander in and get the password that was written on a post-it note on the side of the chair? Or did you think it was more plausible that Wade would be able to, like, basically hack the entirety of IOI whilst a constantly monitored indentured servant? Because both are pretty stupid.
I like it better in
the books, but, you know,
I like it better in the books. Yeah. I find that both being kind of magical, like what happens in the books is more of like a wizard, but, you know,
I felt the whole password thing was just really dumb. And I mean, I like that they gave Sam more to do, but I think it would have been more kick-ass if they'd actually made her, like, somehow win through hacking rather than...
The password thing, the thing that really pissed me off, is it wasn't like, you know, :/35. It wasn't like some complicated password. It was like, bossman69. He can't remember that. He has to write it down. Really? Like,
he's not that stupid. It was weak.
I think that's just a commentary on us old people that have to write our passwords down to remember.
Really? Do you think
he's an old person who was born in, like, 1990, probably?
Well, are we just going to jump around with things? I think let's stick,
if we can, with the real world. The other thing I thought was a bit kind of weird reading this book is that the good guys are really good and the bad guys are really bad. And that goes for the book and Spielberg's version. Like, it's quite... No one goes on a journey, really. No one learns and gets better. I mean, Spielberg shoves some stuff at the audience about how sometimes we should disengage from the online world. But again, I thought in the kind of the post... kind of like it felt very early 80s, and it just feels like now we're much more used to fiction, especially for kids, that's much more shaded and people are much more ambiguous, and that's okay. And this didn't have any of that, not even in the source book, actually, which surprised me. I mean, I get that in the Spielberg, but I was surprised that the Ernest Cline wasn't a bit more, I don't know.
Well, I think that's what he loves. I mean, Ernest Cline loves those movies, everything that it was pretty cut and dry, like from the video games, it's, you know, good, bad. And that's what he doubles down on in the books.
So it's a throwback.
I assume, but like, I mean, Duncan wrote a pretty, Valkyrist on the forums, had a really nice response to his thoughts. And I agree with everything he said, you know, where there really is, it is pretty black and white and there's no real journeys, but like, it's still fun. And I mean, Spielberg didn't change much of that. There was more of it.
Oh, yeah. Book, oh, yeah.
But it was the same tone. Yeah.
Right.
But that can be fun also. That doesn't, not every book has to be like, what did we learn or how did we evolve? You know, he's quoting, you know, Monty Python and, you know, playing Galaga. Like, they're not particularly deep. I mean, I love Monty Python, but, you know.
Right, right. You're not coming here for, like, you know, deep philosophy.
It's not a Truffaut, you know,
contemplation of the world.
And that's okay, right? I mean, I think to me, therefore, this film, and that's maybe why I loved it so much in the book too, is it fell into that category of what I call kind of puzzle books. And I would put in that category Agatha Christie, which I love, but you don't care about the characters. There's no character development. It's just, it's a puzzle and you solve it, or you don't. Yeah. And that's the fun of it. And even books like Da Vinci Code, which I know we're all meant to be very sniffy about and say is trashy, but I really loved reading it because it was a puzzle and you did go to the next chapter and the next chapter. And I think there is a very kind of pure and simple pleasure in trying to figure out clues and see them navigate the next level. And even just seeing him stupidly play Pac-Man, you know, I mean.
Yeah. Why James Patterson, the best-selling author of all time? Because he writes fun, easy mysteries that's what people want. There's nothing wrong with that. If that's
exactly. I'm not ashamed.
I'm not. We saw a ton of his books.
How did you guys feel in the book? I thought it was just a bit too weird and I mean, I loved all the kind of Wade Watts locked up in his little, you know, rented flat, which is just set up for gaming, and it's become like knowing he's becoming this haunted, sort of malnourished.
Don't forget the real doll.
And he's got he's got like a war door for his pizza, you know, like leave it in like the airlock.
And he just decides it's easier to jack off than try and use the sex doll.
There you go.
Sounds about right.
I mean, like, again, I just wish it wasn't Spielberg directing the real world stuff, because that would have been the contrast with that and the kind of almost innocent sort of romance with Artemis versus this real world, a man has his needs and they're quite grimy and disgusting kind of stuff, would have been really cool as a film.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, Spielberg, I used to really love Spielberg movies, and then the last decade or so, he's kind of fallen off to me. I mean, he's still put out some good movies, and I enjoyed this, because this is kind of what he does well. But, like, some of the things, like, so, like, with Artemis, like, in the book, like, her avatar was basically her. It just didn't have the birthmark, and she thought that was, like, I thought that was, like, a pretty interesting commentary, because she thought that was, like, dramatically changing her appearance by just removing the birthmark. And in here, she's, like, an alien creature, like completely different, which
like manga Artemis. And I hated the fact that in the real world, like, the book makes it very explicit that Sam is Rubenesque, like she's a little bit overweight but still gorgeous. And I just thought, like, it was just really boring to me that they cast two real world actors who were sort of model pretty. That really got to me. Like, I mean, if you want to make some earnest point about how we should disengage from Oasis, fine. But, like, be consistent in your earnestness. Can you not make an earnest point about how two teenagers who just look like normal teenagers with normal figures and normal teenage skin, that they can have a beautiful love story too?
Yeah. And even, I think, like, I think that there are, I mean, they didn't really have time because it's a movie. And so they had to change a lot of things. But some of the things, like they lost basically everything to do with, like, Daito and Shoto, like just the whole aspect of them being these kind of lost, you know, troubled Japanese youths that sort of found like a, you know, brotherhood together. And then
what are you
know,
talking about? There's
murder
funny,
and all that
scene at the beginning with the Japanese guy trying to run out the window. That we got from that.
Yeah, well, right. Where he tries to kill himself because he lost everything.
Introducing them early, like meeting in real life early, I hated that because that was one of the best parts of the book. Was at the end. I mean, Moro. I mean, I like how Moro was a little less hands off, but I didn't like how he was actually not. But like, not killing them, and of course you have to change his name to Sho because Shaito was way too very close to Daito. But no, like,
he has an Asha Yara thing going on there, isn't
it? Too much.
Yep. Janet, Julia, Asha, Yara.
Again,
no one can have names that are similar on TV.
It's classic Spielberg, isn't it? You take probably the darkest element of the book, which is one of the five being killed, like brutally assassinated.
And you turn him into an 11-year-old with quips.
And that's like classic Spielberg. It's the shit he's been doing since Temple of Doom, where, you know, which we just watched really recently, right? Well, like, let's have a cute little Asian kid and let's like patronize him and like, oh, you're so cute, you know. And he was cute, so what am I saying? But it's just like, you took like one of the coolest, grittiest bits of the book and the sense of peril that one of them can actually die. Because let's be honest, in the film, I never thought any of them would actually die in the real world, even when the aunt gets blown up or whatever.
Yeah. And even when like Artemis is there forever and you're like, this is a bad idea, she just walks right out. You're like, yep, that's what I thought would happen.
In fact, it's even worse than Luke Skywalker and Aunt Peru, isn't it? It's like Luke Skywalker at least gets like a 10 seconds where he mourns his uncle and aunt and then moves on to his adventure, where here Wade Watts watches his family get blown up and is like, eh, carries on. And
he's chloroformed.
Yeah, exactly. So stupid.
I did not like the welcome to the resistance whole thing. That was a little too
All the
stuff
we're
complaining about is how these are like movie tropes of, you know, evil bad guy versus plucky good guys, but like that's what the book, what he was putting together his crew, and like they're fighting back against the evil company. So
right,
but there was more peril. I don't know. In fairness to Ernest Cline, there was more peril in the book than there was in the film.
Yeah, but you know, we have to put it down.
I mean, because doesn't he? After the stacks get blown up, doesn't he disappear for, you know, like weeks or something before showing back up again?
Yeah.
You know, like he goes and gets himself set up, and then, you know, they all kind of, you know, go off grid a bit. I mean, there's not enough. Yeah, you can't put as much space on here. Like, I thought, like, they, like, all of the challenges were completely different, and like the first one just being like a race against King Kong, and I don't know. That was,
yeah,
I mean, it was cool, but
some of those were probably practical reasons, like they couldn't get the rights to the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, I assume, so they had like the Holy Hand Grenade as a nice homage, but and The Shining took me, I totally enjoyed that. I was like, oh, this is, I don't know what's happening, and I like that, but then I just didn't like it because I'm like, oh, it could have been cooler if they did it the other way.
Yeah, The Shining was unexpected, and that's what I liked, is because they had to change so much, there were a lot of surprises, so it was a kind of a fresh experience watching it. I think that helped, having already seen the book. It was like I knew it was going to be vastly different, you know, very quickly.
Are we going to jump into the Oasis now? Is there anything else we want to talk about in the real world?
No, sorry.
Or are we cool? Can we talk maybe a bit about Morrow before we jump into the Oasis?
Yeah.
And his role, because that's radically different book to screen.
Can we talk about him and Halliday if we want to?
Yeah, that's true. I didn't get why, when Halliday was dying and realized he'd made some mistakes, that he just didn't leave everything to Morrow.
He's still a little weird.
His wife thing, you know.
But that's right. Not really in the book as... I mean, I just felt Spielberg was really trying to lay it on thick with the whole Rosebud. It's his love for Morrow, not really the love for the wife, that is his eternal regret and all that bollocks. Because that wasn't as much in the books, right?
Well, Halliday was not a normal... Like, you couldn't classify him, you couldn't pigeonhole him. Like, I guess it stuck with his... what we knew about him, that he would do something like that, you know, make a game out of it, because what it all end with, he just wanted people to have fun playing his games. Like, that's all that really mattered to him.
Yeah, and I think the movie was more effective than the book in making him that, you know, awkward, that awkward character, you know. So, I mean, that's, you know, the actor, and kind of they really focused on that whole thing.
Oh, it's a great performance, I thought. Yeah. Like, just the way he does the voice and everything.
That voice is creepy.
I did think the whole, like, you know, hence using The Shining, that you're meant to rescue the fiance or whatever. I found that a little bit forced. Like, really? I don't know.
Yeah.
I like The Shining part. I did not like that part of it.
So did Ernest Cline consult on these changes, I wonder? Because, I mean, like, I saw there was, like, a pre-thing with, like, Steven Spielberg, you know, I think it was like HBO or something. And he was talking about, you know, when I wrote the script or whatever. He's like, well, me and Ernest and Zach Penn, he mentioned like a few people, like they all like co-wrote the script. But I wonder how much like everyone was involved in that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Actually, I can look it up. Let me just open up the IMDb page.
Because you got to think that Cline probably, like, in writing the book, had several ideas, maybe similar to these, that were, like, you know, left on the cutting room floor of, you know, stuff he wanted to have them do or go through or whatever. So I'm curious, it's like, if some of this is stuff that he had just kind of left behind, or is this just stuff Spielberg came up with, or... Because some of it feels like it very much fits with Halliday, both in the movie and the book, and some of it feels like, well, it doesn't seem like he would really be into that. So, I don't know. But that's, again, like, the, you know, the ability of a book where you can just write whatever you want into it, really, and not really have to worry about the intellectual property rights, the way you're doing it, versus a movie where you're like, well, do we want to show, you know, well, we own Halo, so we have to put Halo guys in there. You know, like, what can we actually put in there?
I thought Spielberg was quite restrained in not showing his own stuff, apart from that Jurassic Park dinosaur.
Yeah, well, I mean, he may not even be allowed to, you know what I mean? That's what I'm saying, is like... Mm. You know,
the rights to Star Wars or something, but like they still had references to it, so I guess they could talk about Star Wars without showing it.
They can say, oh yeah, we'll get you a Millennium Falcon. Like, what? Oh yeah, but no, you're not ever going to see that on the screen because, you know, different company.
Yeah, it doesn't actually. IMDb Pro doesn't have him, doesn't have Ernest Cline as an exec producer, and he doesn't explicitly say he consulted on it, so maybe they just took the book and said, thank you very much, and we'll now go make the film.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, paycheck, I'm sure he's fine with that.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I was just curious.
Oh, no, he was a co-writer. So during the race sequence, the marquee of a theatre can be seen. It reads Schwarzenegger Jack Slater 3. This is a nod to Arnold Schwarzenegger's film Last Action Hero, also written by Zach Penn, who wrote the script to this. According to Penn, the nod was unintentional and was included by ILM staff, as suggested by co-writer Ernest Klein. So he must have been consulting on it if he could influence what was in the background. But that, I mean, it shows just the attention to detail, doesn't it? Which is so brilliant. Like, you always want to watch it again with a freezer and think, oh yeah, I get that reference. Oh, yeah. I get that reference.
Yeah, yeah. I do kind of feel like once it's on Netflix or something, it'd be good to rewatch and you'll find a lot of stuff. Because there was stuff that goes so fast, you're like, wait, what did I just see? What was that? Yeah.
Do you guys want to talk more about Halliday or anything else real world? I mean, some of this stuff blurs, right? It's not concretely real versus Oasis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my main question for him is at the very end at this point. But I guess we'll get to that.
Okay, so let's jump into the Oasis. How did you guys like it? Did it feel like you thought it would feel? Did you like these special effects?
It felt too, I mean, busy. Like, I honestly couldn't focus on a lot of the scenes. Like, it was too much to look at. But I liked how, you know, it looked amazing, but you could still tell it was fake, obviously. No, it was fine. You know, I have never done, like, virtual reality, so I don't know how. I assume this is times 10 of that. But, no, the way you presented it, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to feel, like, real enough that you could still connect with the characters as, like, you know, these people were still in the world as, like, whoever they were. But it's also supposed to feel kind of shiny, right? I mean, there's giant robots and shit running around, too, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, I thought it looked probably like it would, you know, if something like this actually happened. There would just be, you know, visual barf everywhere, right? Just, like, everyone's different tastes conflicting.
And how did you like, let's talk about some of the characters that just in the way, like I-Rock is a much bigger character, like for comedic effect in the film. Okay. I mean, for me, I love TJ Miller, so I-Rock was great, but it's the same character he always plays, who's basically obnoxious. But
yeah,
I loved the design of him. I just loved it. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, he was hilarious. I mean, the best part was this, like, really creepy, menacing avatar, you know, with, like, a skull for a chest and holes right through him. And then he's like, yeah, my neck kind of hurts, man. Can we get that looked at? You know, like, just, like, he was actually just kind of, like, really lame at a couple points, but also, like, going around murdering people, sort of. Yeah. And then at the end, when he's like, no, man, I don't want to lose my shit. Like, that's exactly the sort of reaction you would expect from that guy.
Yeah, because he's just a geek gamer, right, at the end of the day.
Yeah. Which, I mean, the whole concept between both the book and the movie, where it's like, if you die, you lose everything, would never, ever work. Like, they couldn't possibly have something like that function in like, a real-world version of this, because there would literally be people rioting and, like, destroying cities.
Especially given...
shit, if they lost 10 years worth of shit.
Exactly, especially given the fact that in the book, like, the financial stakes are huge. I mean, the Oasis currency is the real currency, effectively. And people are spending a lot of money to transport between planets. You know, like, this would be the equivalent of you die in the game and someone repossesses or forecloses on your house. I mean,
right. It's like it's like you build a house or you build a car or whatever in the real world, and then you make one wrong decision and, like, the bank just, like, takes everything and says, you owe us money, you know. Like, it would never, it's impossible, because in games are designed generally for people to die. Like, the game where you don't, like, just respawn over and over again, you know, is kind of rare. And they did make it clear in the book that there were a lot of worlds that you could go, and, like, you didn't die, there were challenges, you could succeed or fail, but, like, they were not, like, you know, death zone worlds, and then there were other areas where you could die, you know, like, the really hardcore stuff. But even, you know, even, like, the top guys that would go out there, if you spent, you know, 5 or 6 years and you had the equivalent of, you know, $10,000 or $20,000 worth of stuff in the real world and you die, I mean, like, I guess the only thing is you're withdrawing stuff to your real world bank account all the time and selling stuff. I mean, I don't know how the economy would work.
Yeah, I assume there was some separation between, like, the stuff you're collecting, like, your magical items and, like, your credits, or gold coins is different than, like, credits. I don't know. I mean, I played Diablo back in the day. That's the only thing I can compare.
I mean, a system would make more sense. Like, you know, like H has his garage with all that shit. You're telling me all of that just disappears if he dies? Like, it would make more sense that, like, you know, you have a store where you keep your shit, and then anything you have on you, you know, when you die, obviously dies. That's more typical. But I mean, they wanted to do that to add you know, suspense and stakes, you know, at the end of the book and movie, so that, like, hey, when you die, it's kind of real. But it doesn't really make sense.
I just want to go to the Tolkien world and walk, live on the map of the From the Silmarillion.
That's funny, because that's like basically world, exactly bro? What you said in the book club version of
this. Yeah. I don't remember saying that, but it's still true.
I remember you saying that. Because I re-listened to that, and I reread the book like 2 3 weeks ago.
I mean, I do have a 9x12-foot map of the Silmarillion on my wall, so that makes sense. I think I mentioned that as well.
Wait a second. I didn't know it was that big.
It might be 6x9. It's pretty big, though.
I did not know it was that big.
I thought that was like the first picture I ever posted.
Like a 3-foot map.
Like the Silmarillion thread. It's one I made by hand. So.
Yeah. Did anything kind of fall flat in the Oasis as far as like the mechanics? Like, so you have the three challenges, and I felt that like the final challenge was really stupid, personally. I mean,
well, I had
the first one with the racing, and then they went backwards. I mean, that was actually kind of neat when he's going backwards and stuff. But the fact that, you know, people had known about this challenge forever and no one had passed it, I thought was kind of silly. I like the idea that the first challenge had been on like the school planet and no one found it because no one thought to look there because there was nothing there. You know, I liked that in the book. But yeah, I would think that going to adventure, like the first Easter egg ever, which is something that's mentioned like a million times in the book, isn't it? And like going and finding the Easter would be like, you know, as soon as you see that there's an Atari 2600 there, that's the first thing they would do, I would think. You know, all of these like scholars, quote unquote, instead they're just playing every different type of game, you know? It seems like they really like didn't even know anything, you know what I mean? Like they were just, well, let's try this at random.
I just feel it's kind of like really dumb that, I mean, as much as I love Wade and I know he's a geeky guy, and I think Duncan might have pointed this out on the original podcast, that it, in a way, when you read the book, it's amazing because he wins because he's practiced so much and it's a reward for talent and hard work. But then he's so young, he can't possibly spend all the hours, he says, I mean, there just aren't enough hours. But I just felt that, you know, when you look at IOI and they have all these geeks whose full-time job it is to crack all this stuff. So if Wade could have amassed that knowledge between them all, surely they could have all amassed the same amount of knowledge.
Yeah.
And that kind of, I mean, it didn't bug me at all when I was watching it. I was totally enthralled by it. I loved everything in the Oasis. I was totally into the challenges. But afterwards it was like, yeah, the two things that really bug me is why didn't Halliday just leave it all to Og rather than risk it going to someone nefarious? And secondly, you know, it just seems stupid to me that this whole room of people who had all the knowledge of everywhere ever couldn't have figured it out. And especially when IOI, we find out, are like tapping people's conversations. I mean, surely they can just suck up all the little bits of puzzle that everyone has solved and bring it all together.
Right. It still takes people to sort through that, you know, millions of whatever. But I think, I mean, like the redheaded geek girl at the end who's like, wait, you know, try adventure. Okay, no, wait, now I've figured it out. It seems like she probably had the idea probably early on and just was too afraid to say it is what it almost seemed like, you know? Like, that sounds stupid, so she, you know, they probably would have, you know, that's to create, you know, suspense and all that, but yeah, it seems like she was pretty onto it, so I don't know. Like, I think the only reason why he did the contest instead of leaving it to his buddy is, like, number one, you know, he's getting old anyway, and I don't think that he necessarily, I don't know, it wasn't that he didn't trust him, but, you know, he wanted someone to kind of, that proved that they thought a bit like him, even if it was forced.
I agree. I think it's, he loves gaming, so for him it's natural that it be one in a game, even though he knows Og would do a perfectly good job. That's the answer to my question, but it just did bug me. I found it less, I liked the idea that it was just that extra life thing in the film. I thought that was much more elegant than the whole heavy-handed, let me just happen to Og ex machina and fly you all to my totally safe space with really kick-ass equipment, you know.
Yeah, but I didn't like how he got, I liked how in the book, he got the extra life just
yes.
by fucking around and doing his, you know, like, oh, let me do this for fun.
Like he decided he was going to go play a perfect game of Pac-Man just for the shit of it.
Which
and
is
was
something
like, what
that,
the hell
like,
is this?
Kids will do. And in this one, it was literally like, let me make a bet with you, flick you the coin. And like in the book, he knew he had an extra life. Like, oh, it's an extra life coin. I'll hold on to that. But in this, he didn't know what it was until after the fact. It's not a huge
deal. In the book, he didn't know it was an extra life coin. He couldn't figure it out. It was stuck to his inventory, and he couldn't cast spells and shit on it. Yeah, he had no idea what it was, but he couldn't get rid of it. He couldn't sell it.
It's been a while since I read the book.
Yeah, but the whole thing where it's like, oh, well, the caretaker is actually, you know, Ogden Morrow, and he just found a way to give you an extra life because he liked you and he thought you had a good chance of winning. Like, that was a little weird, yeah.
And
I mean, it feels like cheating, but
I hated the fact at the end where it's like, he flicks in the coin. I was like, please don't say you're the curator. Please don't say you're the curator. And he's like, you're the curator? That was my, like, fuck. Also, there was a kid sitting behind me who, like, obviously loved the book and, like, was so excited. But, like, every time, a new scene started, he's, like, whispering to his friend, like, oh, I know what this is. And then, like, Mechagodzilla. And then Mechagodzilla. Like, he was, if I didn't know, like, I would have been so pissed. But also, I was so happy that he was, like, so into it that he was literally,
yeah,
was like, oh, I know what's going to happen now. But I think that's who the movie was geared for.
There are worse things in this world than kids who are really excited because they read a book. I mean, God bless that kid, right? You know.
The only time I ever told someone to shut up at a movie was at Return of the King, and I almost got beat up. But
what happened? I've had to do that a couple times, and it's never fun.
Yeah, no. The kid was like kicking my seat. I just turned around, I was like, "Will you please shut up?" And he was like with six of his friends, and my friend was like, "You know they're gonna like track you down after the movie now." But luckily, we just ran out.
How did you guys feel about the end of the film? Like, did you think it was? Did you like the fact that, you know, it was a love story in the end, and they switch off the Oasis for days so they can make out, you know?
No, I hate that.
They could just make out in the Oasis next to each other. I mean, it'd be perfectly fine. Oh, gosh. No, I thought that felt a little bit forced.
No, I did not like it either. But what I liked even less was the whole, you know, when Sorrento going after them with a gun and like his Rihanna like assistant who was her name.
I totally forgot about her. She was so stupid.
Her name
Finale?
Her name was Finale, I mean.
Yeah, it was her name, stupid. It may as well have been a cappella, right? It was so stupid. I mean, you can tell that
it made them more comical. But the fact like he has a gun and he, you know, Wade invites like we need everyone to help protect us, like come to the stacks in Columbus, and then everybody shows up, but there's one guy with a gun and 500 people around him, and of course, in my head, I'm like, oh, great, this is some, like, anti-second, people are going to take this as, like, an anti-gun control thing, where, like, no one has guns in the future, so they can't help their friends, and then the cops show up, and it's fine, but, like, that kind of, it's like, no one has a weapon, a crowbar, anything to throw.
I never thought about that. You don't need a weapon, like, there was, like, 10 people within arm's length just start grabbing at his hand, like, you know, I mean... Like, and he's holding the gun in the air. He's like, no one come near me. And he's holding it up. It's not even pointing at anyone. So, like, I was like, oh, he's going to get mobbed and ripped apart. And they're all like, okay, everyone back off, back off.
Yeah,
like, let him go right up to the van for some reason. So then we can see that he kind of has a soul.
Oh, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, of course, because Spielberg wants to show that, like, no one's truly bad in Spielberg. Everyone's
like, we'll see, like, oh my gosh, yeah, he's found the Easter egg, and he's, you know, he's found the Holy Grail, and even this, you know, evil Nazi guy is kind of like, all right, bro.
Yeah, he can respect the game.
Those kegels, he's really
game recognized game, you know.
It was so stupid. I mean, I do feel that the stuff that I didn't like in the film was more to do with Spielberg than Klein, though. And a lot of the stuff I really liked was to do with Spielberg. So even things like knowing how to edit a scene to convey the fact that in the Oasis you have killed 8 people with a particular weapon, and then to know when to cut to IOI and show those 8 people standing on the plane to die. Like, that's really clever, and it's almost like easy to take it for granted. Like, just that feel for how to edit it and how to know how much information the audience needs to figure out what's going on. Well, that was superb. I mean, that was a masterclass in action editing.
Because that is not as simple as he makes it appear in a lot of his movies. You're absolutely right on that.
No, and probably my favorite scene was when, like, you realize, like, everyone is just stopping what they're doing in their real life and, like, coming, you know, like, when they're driving down the street and they're like, what's happening? And everyone's fighting off IOI, all the nerds.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. Everyone's playing in the streets. But then that also made it feel like, well, this isn't really that much of a dystopian world because everyone has, like, expensive mobile VR gear. Like, so apparently Wade was the only one that was poor. You know, I don't know.
Anything else we should discuss?
There were a lot of good geek moments, just like cool stuff in there, and like stuff they had to change. I mean, like, I think this is the first time we ever see a Gundam on screen in an American film. They just throw a lot of little stuff.
I mean, even stupid stuff like Iron Man falling into the molten or whatever to die, and then just doing the thumbs up like Schwarzenegger in Terminator 2. I mean, that's like, it's a stupid moment, but it just made me happy.
Yeah, it's adorable. That's one thing that like I knew was not going to happen, and it was so much cooler in the book because, you know, I'm like, oh, we've got the Iron Giant. Like, what's okay? I mean, that's cool and all, but in the book, it's like there were, you know, dozens of these, you know, mecha robots from all kinds, like basically from every corner of cinema and anime and all that. And here it's like, well, we can afford two. We can buy two of them.
Right. And one thing that I remember complaining about in the book was like, there was no pop culture references for anything that happened between like 2000 and 2045. But like Spielberg actually did, like he added Minecraft and he added more
content. Yeah, yeah.
We know. And there was a lot of stuff that I had no idea if it was just something that I wasn't getting, like, or if it was something that he made up from the time in between, you know. I'm sure there's someone in 2045 who's cosplaying as something from 2040, you know, that I don't know.
That's so, what I would think. I mean, like,
it felt more complete, not just 80s only references.
Well, wasn't that like Duncan's criticism, was that like with the world of the book and stuff, it's like it's kind of bleak because like no one creates anything new. And I don't think it was that, like, people weren't creating anything new. Like, I don't think they were making new TV shows and movies as much because the cost, you know, the cost of resources to make that sort of thing. But I'm sure that people were still producing new content and writing new stories, and it just wasn't the focus of what was going on in the movie.
Well, it wasn't Wade's and, focus, and it wasn't
right. Halliday's well, because everyone was focused on what Halliday liked, right? Yeah. And so people that had given up just kind of went back to, you know, normal stuff, and they were watching, you know, or doing, you know, stuff that was, you know, more modern. But like 80% of the Oasis felt like it was, yeah, you know, time stuck, right? You know, in like the 70s to 90s in that area.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to say.
Yeah, no, I I've rethought my position. Like, usually I don't care enough to like I did. Like I said, I was like, it was a fun movie and it did what it needed to do. It was just, I was more complaining about the little changes and a couple big ones. But I still think it's a fun movie. I'm just, it's one of those books that I had such a personal connection to and you want to see it. And when you go into a movie with those expectations, you're always going to be let down.
Yeah, I felt the same way with The Da Vinci Code, actually, which I loved in the same kind of way as a puzzle book. And the movie was so clunky and shitty. I was like, that's a bit shit. Never mind. You know, life will go on. It's not going to kill me.
Yeah. But what about the end where, you know, he's in the little room with, you know, 10-year-old Halliday and, you know, here's the button to shut everything off, and he almost hits, which is actually kind of hilarious. And then he's like, so wait a second. He's like, so Halliday's dead, right? And he's like, but you're not like just like a program. He's like, oh, yeah, man, no, not really. What am I? Goodbye.
Well, I thought for a second he was going to be like, I'm not really dead. I was like, I'm glad they didn't do that, because I thought that's what it was.
That's what I thought they were going, but they're like, no, he's dead, but I'm something different. And you're kind of like, we're not going to explore that, huh? Okay. Like, that's way to throw that in right at the end.
I enjoyed that because, like, that was, I think I remember talking about on the book review, like, one of the things that meant the most to me was, like, this guy was just such an introverted person. Like, he didn't think he could have a regular relationship. He couldn't, have regular, just contact with society. And, like, showing him, like, his only friend was himself, you know, a child version of himself.
Right.
I thought that was pretty powerful. And, yeah, I like that. It, you know, I enjoyed that.
I agree. And it is, I tell you what I liked about it actually is that this film or the book is about a kid who just does his homework and works hard and is smart. And like, I was that kid at school, right? I was like the boring geeky kid who just would spend the hours reading shit.
Yeah.
Like, there are no short in the book. There are really, apart from when Ogden saves them, there are no shortcuts. It's just, yeah, we just spent hours rehearsing this game and just playing it. Or Artemis just went back and back to that first challenge to try and get it right. And I kind of appreciate that. It's like, yeah, if you're the stupid kid at school, not the stupid kid, if you're the kid at school who just keeps their head down and does their homework and isn't cool or isn't in the Breakfast Club, you know, actually that's useful. That's a skill. You go.
Yeah. And IOI are the ones that were trying to cheat and to cut corners, and they lose. So.
And I think that's part of why, like, the book definitely spoke to me a bit, because it's like, you know, I mean, growing up, I always had friends, and I was, you know, was never, like, the super popular kid, but, like, I would, you know, I was friends with most everybody, and I had really close friends. But, you know, I think differently than other people. My brain just works kind of in a weird way. I do things that other people are like, that's a waste of time, or, you know, I confuse people a lot, you know. And I'm not as good with, like, I mean, I guess the way I would put it is, like, I understand people a lot, but I'm not as good as, like, conveying to people, you know, on the personal level as much.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry, Adam, I don't understand what you're saying.
Fuck you. thing. But yeah, no, I mean, I get what it's like to, like, when I've had, like, really good friends that, you know, think like me and you connect on that level, but it's just not everyone's like that. And, yeah. You know, you may think something's, like, super interesting and, like, everyone else is into something that you think is completely a waste of time and, like, you know, it's like you're alien sometimes.
I mean, it is,
and
like, so, what Greg know. Said, the fact that, or one of you said earlier that, you know, he is that kid who's going to go and play that Pac-Man game and... partly because he wants to move forward in the quest, which doesn't really help him, or he thinks not at the time, but partly just because we're the kind of people who do get obsessive about stuff and just spend what other people would be considered to be wasting hours on stuff. But here it pays off. So there's this kind of like this goofy hope that all these hours we've devoted in our life to reading goofy stuff and, you know, vocking or whatever it is that we do that other people don't quite get, that it has meaning.
Oh, it totally does, Bina. One day, when they ask me to save the world because I have the knowledge of ice and fire. Yeah.
Oh, no.
What's probably going to happen is people are in 50 years are going to be like, oh, yeah, you were alive during that time where everybody thought that, like, we were going to have an end to that geeky series that HBO did that show about.
Yeah, that epic grind book series that never finished.
But there are 3 new George Martin books coming out this year, and they're, like, comic versions of whatever that new TV show.
Godsmart.
Anyway. But,
do we have other stuff to say about the film?
Nope, outro away.
Okay, so that's all we have to say. If you've seen Ready Player One and or read the book and or agree or disagree with our take, you can chat with us about it at the forums of A Podcast of Ice and Fire. You can leave a comment on our YouTube channel and all sorts of other stuff. Just check out VOK Podcast or Vassals of Kingsgrave and you'll find us. Thank you very much for listening. Bye.
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 This is where we can now just redo the whole script of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Don't come looking for us on Tuesdays and Thursdays because we're closed.
We are the knights who say nee.
And how is that not a thing? Like, how has that not become like a thing that people can do? Like,
that is a thing people can do.
No, like you can like load a game or of Monty Python and have to like speak all the lines.
Oh, I see. But I think with virtual reality, we've got to be very close to that, right? You can imagine Disney, as soon as VR headsets are affordable and are a thing, that you pay $50 or whatever it is and you can just be a character.
Live a movie sort of thing.
Yeah, totally. And even like a real world oasis. I mean, they're building that Star Wars Disney theme park where you pay to go to it for a week and they will assign you a character and you'll be interacting. So not in the virtual world, but even in the real world, this idea of the next stage of gaming and theme parks being entering into that world, I think is very, very close.
I think the Star Wars land, I think, is supposed to be open the end of this year. And it's going to be different than like anything else they've ever done, because you're not going to run around and see people in Disney costumes, like Disney employee uniforms. You'll see everyone dressed up as merchants or whatever. And you won't be buying like souvenir cups that say like you'll be buying like stuff at the gift shops that like look like they're from like the world, you know. It's supposed to be like an immersive marketplace, all this stuff. So I mean, it's an interesting and very expensive experiment they're doing, so we'll see.
Can't wait. Anything else coming up or podcast wise or anything?
Yeah, what are people talking about?
Nothing.
Ice and Fire and stuff.
Ice and Fire Con is coming up in a couple weeks.
Oh, that's right.
Is this your first Ice and Fire Con? Is this your first anniversary with Casey, then?
It is, yes. I'll open to suggestions as for gifts.
Aww, that's so cute.
Adam, are you coming? I know you were on the fence.
I have the time off, but then, like, I was trying to convince my wife to come, and then, like, you know, like, we could, like, hang out part of the weekend or whatever, and she wasn't into it. So, like, I didn't book a room. It's, like, 4 hours for me. It's not far.
I mean, you can always do the day pass for Saturday, because that's, like, everything's on Saturday, and then, like, go home. But no pressure, but it would be fun.
Yeah, I'm contemplating. Like, I mean, because, like, I could still, I mean, there's, like, the campground, and I could get a, like, share a room with someone or something. I don't know. You know, I could still go. I'm just debating it.
Bina has an excuse.
Yeah, Bina, aren't you going to be in the neighborhood of Ohio around that time?
No, I'm going to be...
You don't have anything in Cleveland?
When is it? Is it April 24th?
It's the last weekend of April, so the 28th?
Yeah,
27th, 28th. Yeah, no, actually, so the weekend before, though, Kiralee and I, my best friend and I, are going to Iceland for some GOT fun. So it's GOT Road Trip 3 after GOT, the original road trip to Northern Ireland, and then last year in Dubrovnik. So I'm going to be getting my geek on.
Are you going to be like be seeing stuff now that is like beyond the pale for you?
In terms of
like stuff that they've like done that you haven't seen on the show?
Yeah, but that was also true in Northern Ireland and Dubrovnik, and you just have to like be careful with the tour guides just to say, you know, don't mention.
That's true.
It's pretty cool.
Like this is where Cersei turned into a dragon. Oh, yeah. Spoilers. So sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I mean, it's almost becoming a moot point because I've, since last year in Dubrovnik, I've become zen to the idea that George won't be writing another book. And therefore, right, the whole not watching becomes irrelevant. So a couple of months ago, the UK channel that broadcasts the episodes has been doing reruns. And I've just been watching them because I actually haven't seen it for ages and ages. So today I just saw The Purple Wedding. And I've decided that when it gets to season five, so I'm halfway through season four. When it gets to season five, which is the one I haven't seen, I'm just going to carry on. So
you're going to watch.
Oh, yeah. You should. Yeah.
So, I've always thought of starting again because I've been watching many years.
But If you do get into season five, you might want to like start up like a Skype support chat, maybe just to have somewhere to vent. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to blank. Season seven is over. Like season eight is the one we're waiting for.
Yeah.
Right. Eight is like next year, the final.
But actually, I wouldn't be watching it if I thought I needed a support chat. I just think no matter how outrageous and stupid it is, I genuinely don't care as much. So.
No, me too.
Yeah, well, it took me going through season five and just being like, what the fuck? And then just sort of like at the end of that, on the other side of that, I was like, okay.
Yeah, like, and I've also come to the conclusion that, you know, when this, I mean, this is going to take a year, right? But when this reread is done, then I love these books, but I'm going to put them away. I mean, I've devoted a lot of my life to them. I really love them. I'll still voc on other stuff, but,
yeah,
you know, there's no more understanding that I can meaningfully get from them having done this reread, so...
Unless Winds comes out after this, there's just really not anything else.
Yeah, what else is there to say?
I mean, once Winds, if, you know, Winds drops next year, oh my gosh, let's chat.